On today's episode, I have a really fun conversation with Joseph Jaffe. He's the author of 6 books and counting. He has traveled the world speaking in over 50 countries. He's a daily content creator, the founder of Alpha Collective, and he'll be releasing the world's first book where readers get royalties. Now, I'm sure I'm leaving something off his resume, but he's here to bridge the analog world of business with Web3 while navigating the subjects of his books. And interestingly, some of the topics that he will be discussing was recorded before social media even existed. So we're having a Web3 conversation with ideas that were penned before Web2. Hello, I'm Taj, digitally known as Tropic Vibes, the host of Nifty Business, where we highlight NFTs and explore Web 3.0 as we move from pure speculation to creating real-world value. I'm going to give you a little heads up before we get to the interview. At the end of this episode, I'm going to ask you to just screenshot this, share your favorite part of this conversation on X so we can continue the conversation over there. I'll revisit this thought in a second, but let's just get to this conversation with Joseph. Thank you, Joseph, for coming on to not only speak about Web3, but also the fact that you are integrating this with Business Beautifully more than the average DGen that's just trying to flip into different things, but you're serving customers and you are adding value to the world. And I really appreciate you coming on.
I'm thrilled to be on with you. Really, I am.
So there's quite a few things that are interesting that you're working on. Of course, we cross paths through the Web3 NFT circle. You have the Alpha Collective. I hear you have a book that you'd like to speak about. So we're going to touch all of these various things. But the thing that I really am interested in, like to hear, how did you fall into this and see value that you can add to your clients and customers in this space?
The funny thing, and I needed reminding of it, was my life is generally described, I talk about BP and AP, which is before the pandemic and after the pandemic. And before the pandemic, I actually started my career working on the marketing side for a fast food chicken company called Nando's Chickenland, spicy chicken, flame grilled, butterfly cut, peri peri chicken, yummy. And I was there for 5 years. Moved to the US in 97, worked for a bunch of very large Madison Avenue agencies, went out on my own, wrote 5 books, keynoted in about 51 countries, started 2 companies. One I sold, I always say, in spite of myself, and the other one, after 5 years, I closed down because of myself. The first company, Crayon, we were in Second Life. We were in the metaverse in 2006. 18 years ago, our entire office was an island called Crayonville. So I've always been ahead, and often to my detriment, too many steps ahead. And then my second company, Evolution, was designed to reverse engineer the startup from the brand backwards. So what I meant by that was, what if Kodak acquired Instagram? What if Airbnb had been incubated by Marriott? What if actually Netflix had been sold to Blockbuster? Blockbuster had the chance. So it was apparent to me that big, large, behemoth companies were not growing. They were stagnating. The only way they grow is to buy growth through acquisition. In fact, my 5th book was called Built to Suck, about the demise of the corporation. And that came out a year before COVID. So talk about prophetically warning about at scale cracks become chasms. In 2010, I wrote a book called Flip the Funnel, How to Use Existing Customers to Gain New Ones, Retention as the New Acquisition. I just couldn't get out of my mind why, when 90% of your revenue comes from your repeat, returning, recurring business, companies spend less than 10% of their marketing dollars against that 90% revenue contributing sector. It makes no sense. Very flippantly, I spoke about how companies are always courting strangers and prostitutes. So the stranger is the first-time buyer, and the prostitute is the promiscuous buyer, the switcher. Only enticed by offers and discounts and sweepstakes and 50% off in sales, etc. In the book, Flip the Funnel, I introduced a concept called universal currency. Nike would have a unit, a piece of currency called the swoosh. Coke would have a ribbon. Starbucks would have a mermaid or merman, merperson. Target would have a bullseye. The thing about currencies are they're bought, they're sold, they're exchanged, they're redeemed, they're held, they're gifted. And I spoke about how this universal currency would govern every aspect of the business, not just for employees, but customers. I even created the 3C model, which is content, conversation, and commendations, because it had to be a C, but the commendation was ratings, reviews, testimonials, etc. Now, you've probably already made the connection gee, that sounds a lot like a token, right? What I didn't realize at the time was this thing called crypto would actually enable that to become a reality. But predicting, and it still hasn't happened yet, except for maybe Starbucks and not even, that we're seeing big brands, and I still will predict safely that every brand on this planet will eventually have some kind of a token that will govern loyalty, advocacy, content creation, community, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the beginning. I didn't realize it at the time, but 2010 was the time that I'd actually predicted a new world where we would be rewarding and recognizing not just people who buy from us, but how long they've been a part, how loyal they've been, recommendations, referrals, answering questions, joining communities, helping others, et cetera, et cetera. And I will say that fast forward to, I don't know, 2022 maybe, when Blur had their initial airdrop, and there were others like ENS Domain and recently Jupiter. The concept of the airdrop, I would say, still is one of the most revolutionary advances in marketing and business as we know it, except no one's calling it this at the moment. I also feel the same way with POAPs, proof of attendance protocols. But the point is about the airdrop is you should get free money. You should get something back based on how much business you've given in the past, based on how loyal you've been. The first time when Blur basically kicked OpenSea in the nuts, basically to say, you've been paying all of this gas, right, to do all of these transactions. And based on how much money you've paid to the OpenSea ecosystem, we're actually going to use that to give you something back. To me, that blew my mind. So I know it's a very long answer and context setter, but I want people listening to realize that there are some people thinking strategically about the space from a vision standpoint that believe that this is truly revolutionary, transformative, game-changing for business as we know it. That's why I'm so excited and bullish about the space.
And that is exactly why I'm excited to have you on, because that's the type of stuff that really gets me going. I always call it the not sexy things that's going to change the world. I often use the analogy of who knows what SAP or Oracle really does, yet they're basically running the world of business, right? They're doing all of these things that won't get people all excited. However, the world can't really turn as far as business goes without their software and the different things that they do to serve their customers. So integrating this stuff with business, to me, is the things that's spoken about the least, but I think has the greatest impact, not just for the bottom line, but just like the impact they're going to have on the world. It has a total addressable market of everyone that's interacting with brands. And I like the fact that you said that every big brand or every brand, every company is going to have a token. I come from a family. We have a small business of very loyal customers and so forth. And we manually track all the stuff. We know their faces, and it's such a headache. And my father's not very technical and he's very opposed to technology. Yet I see it as even the small little family owned food business is going to be in that direction. I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And the word that we used to hear a lot, I think associated with Disney, was the word automagically, right? How did it happen? And sometimes it's one of the things I wrote in my fourth book, Zero, was don't pay for attention, pay attention. And the unsexy part that you speak about, I always talk about the story, and I have it in my presentations. I even have a scan of the card. One day I arrived at the Four Seasons in Atlanta. I used to do a lot of consulting with Coke at the time. So I used to get the Coke rate at the Four Seasons, which is amazing. It was reimbursed, but to stay at the Four Seasons at a ridiculously affordable rate. And I remember the 10th time I walked into that Four Seasons, as I checked in, they said, oh, Mr. Jaffe, welcome back. This is your 10th time that you've been here. And I was like, wow, 10, that's amazing. They said, anyway, we appreciate you giving us your business. And then I got into my room and there was a giant fruit basket and chocolate covered strawberries and a handwritten note that basically said again, thank you for, this is your 10th time. We wanted to give you a little token of our appreciation and our gratitude. And so the way I explain that when I give a keynote is, how do they know? What dark magic? They just had a very simple database that was able to ping them and give them a notification saying, hey, give the bloke a fruit basket. How hard is that? It's not hard.
but it makes such a huge difference as a customer. There's this application, the name of it slips me right now, but it allows the business to send a voice recorded message thanking their customer. And I remember the first time I saw this was I joined this, I think it was a mastermind or a course or something of that nature. And within a couple hours, the person that was putting it on sends me a thank you in a video, says my name. And I swore it was like, I'm like, this is not real. This is some sort of thing. And then I listened to it about 10 times. I was like, no, he really said my name. This is someone I listened to, has this huge thing. And it just made me feel like $1 million. And I only spent, I don't know, a few hundred bucks, right?
For the first 2 years, maybe, when I was doing my show. So when COVID hit, I completely pivoted and every keynote speaker was trying to become the best virtual speaker. And I just started a talk show, which was called Corona TV. And I still do it. I've done 650 episodes of the show. It's called Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous Now. But for the first 2 years, I would wish people happy birthday. I started off doing it 7 days a week because what else were we going to do? We were all stuck at home. And then I moved it to eventually every day. And for the first 2 years, probably did it every single day. I still don't know how I did a 1 hour show every single day. And there was a 30-minute after show. But I started off on Facebook. I have a maximum of 5,000 friends. And I get about 34,000 connections on LinkedIn. And so I started off on Facebook and LinkedIn. And anyone whose birthday it was, I would start off by just wishing people happy birthday. And then I would post and say, you got a shout out today on your birthday. And I would send a link to the show. And it's just simple, right? It's just the smallest things are the most valuable things are the cheapest things. We forget that. We forget the fact that just a smile, someone remembering your name, remembering your preference, remembering your birthday. What's the old saying? Common sense is anything but common.
100% true. And I often think of, even in our company, the wages in Jamaica, especially compared to the rest of the world, it's really different. It's kind of mind-blowing to think that people can raise families and send children to college and so forth. And the dollar was being adjusted because of the US dollar to the spread in Jamaica was just taking away. We're getting ready to do a huge raise. And the thing that I was hearing the most, everyone, including our staff, is not really comparing or complaining so much about the dollars. It's so much more about little things like these little trinkets of appreciation and like all these little things that was like unrelated to money itself. And of course, we do this massive raise to adjust for expenses and the complaints were still going. And it was like these little things. I was like, right, you know what? I could probably do this out of my pocket. Had nothing to do with the wages, even though they appreciated the wages. But as far as their happiness goes, it was like these little shows of appreciation that made the huge difference.
It's so funny. Like here we are in a show talking about NFTs and crypto and Web3, and we're talking about analog, which I love, by the way. I used to stay at the Fairmont Hotel, Fairmont Miramar in Santa Monica many, many times because, you know, as I said, I've been fortunate enough through my 5 books pre-COVID to have keynoted in, as I said, 51 countries and many, many times, obviously in the US, Jamaica, obviously I've keynoted in, loved it, but would have preferred to stay there forever. Venezuela, which is probably the one country I'll never go back to. It's not the easiest country as well. But at the Fairmont Miramar in Santa Monica, they give you like a little bath toy. I think it's a turtle. I mean, I haven't been there in so many, I think it's like a little turtle and only one, and it's always put on your bathtub and you just collect them. That's what I remember. I don't remember the price. I don't remember the bed. I don't remember the cocktails. I don't remember anything else, but I remember that there was a little, you know, little squeaky bath toy that I could collect for myself or give to my kids or whatever. And of course, going back to our space, the concept of the airdrop, the POAP, the badge, the small things that say, I appreciate you or acknowledge you or this is a memento, or I just want to surprise and delight. These are not new ideas, surprise and delight. So how can we take surprise and delight and bring it to this world, this crypto world, this Web3 NFT world? The answer is easily, easily. It's not meant to be a rhetorical question. Just do it.
So when you're having conversations with various, say, businesses of whatever size it is, how does that conversation usually go to make them see that this is not this huge technological, just changing the world altogether, but it's still just using it as a tool to do the things that we've always done? How's that conversation normally go? Are they just focusing entirely on the tech when they're speaking with you and missing the boat? Or Do they grasp the idea of what you're trying to say? It's, we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're just using this new tool.
The funny thing is, I don't do a lot of this evangelizing at the moment because I'm a business and a leadership coach now with small and medium businesses. I've got my talk show. I've just published my sixth book, which is not a business book. I should do more of it without ranting. We saw recently Moonbirds and Proof Collective, which is really was the inspiration behind Alpha Collective, being rescued and bought out by Yuga. I haven't heard Gary Vee. It's like he's fallen off the face of the earth and seen a damn thing coming out of his V friends too, let alone one. Ryan Carson left the space. I don't know who's leading the charge. I don't know who's evangelizing. I don't know who's fighting for the space, trying to be the rising tide floats all boats. I wish there was someone who was out there beating the drum. I will tell you that I have a very simple elevator pitch for how I describe Web3. It is shared values, shared ownership, shared rewards. Now, I'll explain to you how I came to it. Kevin Chu, who was I'd met through a rally and the whole unfortunately doomed or rugged rally. You know, I had my Jaffe coin back in the day, that 2021. I figured that was my path to, you know, freedom and retiring, and got rugged radically with that. That's another story for another day. But Kevin, in an interview, had said it's two things. It's technology and business model, right? The technology is blockchain, immutable, public-led, everything we know, incorruptible. We understand what the blockchain is. And he spoke about the business model is this idea of, and I'll now add some of my stuff to it, it's the secondary market, it's royalties. We were talking about this idea that you could be a struggling artist, right? You could be like the typical struggling artist who only becomes wealthy after your death. And someone buys your art for pennies on the dollar and now it's selling for millions and millions. It's not fair. It's not fair. It shouldn't be that way. The original creator of the art, or of the, people spoke about houses being built on the blockchain or sold on the blockchain, that every single time it changes hands, that original creator or builder should be able to benefit from it. And so technology and business model. And so I added values. So shared values is purpose, right? Shared ownership for me is diversity, equity, inclusion, and access. And shared values, shared ownership, shared rewards is loyalty. So when you position it that way to a big brand, you go, listen, Web3, crypto, blockchain, you know, SBF, all these snake are like, ugh, you know, like, but here are three things that I think are important to you. Tell me if I'm wrong. Purpose. Simon Sinek, start with why. What is, purpose. Everything is purpose, where it's our number one or number two agenda. What about diversity, equity, inclusion, and access? Absolutely. One of our top three as well. What about loyalty and advocacy and retention? Absolutely. One of our top three. In fact, those are our top three. I go, welcome to Web3. Maybe that's what the three in Web3 stands for. Your three priorities can be delivered through this. And so I laddered all of that up to what I call community capitalism. We've heard we is greater than me, Simon Mainwaring, a lot of the Simons talk about we is greater than me. But this idea of community capitalism, the evolution of capitalism, this is the promise of Web3. That actually says the Matthews effect, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. We can actually give a little bit more to a whole bunch more people and actually even make as much, if not more money. There's a breakthrough controversial idea. And this is where I landed. This is exactly where I landed, which is there is something called, I don't know if you've heard of the concept of what's called an ESOP, an employee share owned program. There are many of them, ESOPs out there. So I was thinking, why can't there be CSOPs? Why not customer share-owned programs? Why are we not sharing the spoils with our customers and our employees? Just a little bit. Doesn't have to be a lot. And everyone, idiots, I'm trying not to like get too like ranty here, but we'll turn around and say, "What? It's not socialism. It's not even close to it. It's the evolution of capitalism. because capitalism as we know it is in dire need of some kind of a refresh. Desperate, dire need. And so I think this is justice. I think this is, Victor Hugo said, there is nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come. This is the opportunity. And it's here right now. And it is actually Web3. I'm going to read to you something. I was just looking for it now. It says, I read somewhere recently that Starbucks made about $24.5 billion profit last year. But if they raise the annual pay of their 400,000 employees by $11,000 per person, they would only be left with $20 billion profit. Capitalism sucks. The workers dry. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? They would go from 24.5 to 20 billion, which is nothing, right? You would think. But in exchange, 400,000 employees would get $11,000 extra in terms of their pay. It just blows my mind. And there's so many examples like that. So that, to me, is the imperative. That actually Web3 might even just be able to save the corporation. That is the biggest lofty thing. And capitalism, there's nothing bigger than that. I've got my roadcaster here, so I can swear. Okay, this is the biggest business idea in the history of business. That's why I'm so excited about it.
You tied in so many different touch points for me, even a lot of those things that I've spoken about on the show, and you glued together probably, I don't know, 100 episodes in various different things that you touched. That was like a great rant or segment, whatever you wanted to call it when you first started. But honestly, it was like a summary of the last 100 episodes. So I really appreciate that. And it's very interesting in the sense that when you said community ownership, right, and thinking of that various things, I think of a guy that I know that owns this thing called Travel Tiger. I don't own one. I have no affiliation with them or whatever. But he's so excited to always bring this up and speak about it. He says, look, I travel all over the world. And this is a Web3 project or Web3 company. There's so many different places that you can book your thing, TripAdvisor, Expedia, Travelocity, all of them, he goes down. The reason why I always use this one, and I always tell my family, friends, and everyone to do it, is because rather than advertising and giving the money to Google and all these different things, they're actually funneling it back to their users to go out and evangelize. And so he's excited about it. And they have the tokens and all these different things. And I was like, okay, that's really cool what you're doing. In a way, what you just summarized is actually in practice already by, and not just them, but other companies. So a lot of times we say, oh, this is a pipe dream, pie in the sky and whatever. But in very small ways, we see this already working. Now it's just to scale it out and have other businesses that have the more eyes on them and so forth, because this is a profitable company. This isn't just like a, we'll hope for the best and we'll acquire and just hope we don't go bankrupt before we're profitable. They're already profitable doing it. And they're just not as massive as a Kayak or, one of the other ones. So it's very interesting that you said that.
I'll give you just a couple of other interesting ideas. This is one I've been playing with as well. The airline business, right? And forget about how this came into being, because I've got thoughts on that too. But imagine there was an NFT, and possessing that NFT allows you to basically access the back row of the aircraft. Let's just go with American Airlines, right? So American says that the worst row of right by the toilets, those are reserved for NFT holders. And as long as you possess this NFT, you show up at the airport, you go, listen, I'd one ticket. Where can I go? Where is there availability right now for an NFT seat? And they're like, you could go to Hawaii. Great. Awesome. Show the NFT in your wallet. And now you sit at the back of the aircraft, but you fly anywhere you want to in the world. Worst row on the aircraft, which now is like experiential, because you could literally, like, every day of your life or every weekend, you can travel to another destination. You can sell it. You can transfer it. It's incorruptible. It's immutable, tied to business fundamentals. That's the point, right? One of the most, I think, revolutionary companies that we've seen in terms of business model was Priceline. Because Priceline basically said, you don't benefit as an airline or a hotel if your room is empty or if the seat is empty. Now, there is a cost associated with that seat, right? Based on the average weight of a passenger and their baggage or luggage, etc., and the pretzels and whatever. But let's just say it's $32, you know, to fly for per 100 miles or per 1,000 miles. If someone's prepared to pay you $33, well, you made a dollar profit. That's not bad, right? And that's what Priceline did. They used a revolutionary pricing algorithm or business model to actually say, listen, every dollar over and above whatever your break-even cost is a win. And we put bums in seats and we put people in beds. And in many respects, the NFT becomes this beautiful way to actually demonstrate, Amex said, membership has privileges or whatever, or benefits. So that's kind of membership, right? Customers are members, are they not? And then when you just add community to it, it just becomes even more powerful. That was my vision behind Alpha Collective. What Kevin Rose did with Proof Collective, I would do for business and marketing and call it Alpha Collective. I wasn't able to get it off the ground. Crypto winter, SBF, lack of resources, but I haven't given up on it. I still believe in a YPO or a peer-based community for marketing and marketers and creators and technologists and NFT founders to come together and do business and network and collaborate and help one another. And I'm not going to give up on it. It's crazy. Like sometimes it's just dumb luck or just finding that Vitalik who decides to punt Pepe coin. And then you're like, seriously, is it that easy? Or is it that difficult? Sometimes it's just dumb luck.
I don't know how that's a quote, but the harder you work, the more luck you get. In this case, it's like the more things that you're putting out, not stopping your podcast. And another thing that I really related to when you said every single day during the depths of everything, I was putting out 365 days also with this, obviously not an hour, which I think is just crazy. These are shorter episodes, especially solo, but I did that right through. But now that things are getting exciting again, just showing up, I've been getting so many more opportunities. And people are saying, like, how are you so lucky with this? It's not really that we're lucky. It's just we literally were going through this whole thing together when no one cared what we were doing, but we so believed in it that we just kept going. So as far as Alpha Collective, I think it's great that you still have it up there as your banner on your profile. You haven't hid it away, tucked it away, and become a travel influencer or something.
You know, I call it Groundhog Day in the metaverse, right? Digital, social, mobile. I just see big brands and marketers making the same mistakes over and over again. And it's become apparent to me, and I say this, someone could steal it tomorrow if they want to. I don't care. I'd like them to. They don't even have to give me credit. I prefer it, but they don't have to. But my point is peer-based, right? YPO. How many times do we look at the world and go, why does it operate this way? Like I always tell the story, two guys who couldn't get a cab or car when they needed one, so they started Uber. Oftentimes, when we see these things and we look at them, they all come from just curiosity or frustration or pain. If we learned anything, you and me, during this time, during COVID, during Web3, is the power of when discords were thriving, when the power of the GM, we were all just connected and coming together and we're a bunch of strangers and we're all just helping each other out. That's why I was so gutted, just gutted when Ken Griffin, to me, is the evilest person in the world, Citadel, when he bought the Constitution. Like I was actually in the ER that day. I had heart surgery in 2021 and complications and infections. And I had an awful time medically. And I was in the ER for my second infection and my fourth hospital stay. And I'm sitting there waiting to be seen. I've got a fever. I'm sweating. I'm like dying basically. And I've got YouTube live watching the auction at Sotheby's, I think, thinking I'm going to own a piece of the Constitution. $41 million was raised and he went and paid $43 million for it. And now with GME, with this like, you know, this like the red headband, there's something powerful about community. Listen, I'm no flash in the pan. I'll tell you, I'm an old fart. But I'll tell you that my first book, Life After the 32nd Spot, I wrote it in 2004. I came up with 10 alternatives to traditional advertising. One of them was called consumer generated content. YouTube didn't exist yet. One of them was called mobile. The iPhone didn't exist yet. One of them was called gaming. You know, Discord and Xbox didn't exist yet. One of them was called communal marketing, which I defined as marketing to and through communities. Facebook didn't exist, and nor did the term social media. So I have been bullish on community as long as I can remember, and I'm not going away, and nor is community.
As far as now getting, let's say, the next 1 billion people to also see that vision, what do you think the world looks like for that to happen, and especially from a business standpoint?
When I started Alpha Collective, I said our vision was to usher in a new era of community capitalism. And the mission was to onboard the next 1 billion wallets. And then it came also to get the next 1 billion brand dollars and the next 1 billion wallets. I think we all recognize how unbelievably difficult, how high the bar was to get into the space. Still to this day, not just the ability, oh, it's just easy, just download MetaMask and your 12-word key phrase and don't ever lose it. And then getting rugged and having your wallet drained. And it's just, unfortunately, that's the stain and the hangover of the past. Custodial wallets help. Making it easier to get in and get on board helps for sure. And that is going to be the key. That will be the key, is being able to just lower the barrier to entry and find that bridge between Web 2 and Web 3. Now, I'll tell you how I'm doing it is with my new book, Forever Changed, which is a COVID memoir and a self-help book that actually says, using quantum superposition, if you didn't change during the last 3-4 years, then you wasted an opportunity. This was our once in a lifetime opportunity to prioritize what's important in our life, to stop being miserable, to love what we do, be true to ourselves and stay the course, which is Amor Veritas Vigor. But one of the things in the book is that this is the world's first book where readers get royalties. So 10% of the royalties of the book will be split between 1,000 true fans, 1,000 NFT royalty or NFT splitter holders. Now, I will tell you, I'm not talking about it. I'm starting to, which is why I'm talking to you. I've been busy. I have lack of resources. I don't have the technology built. I'd like it to be built. I'm talking to a couple of companies that I'm trying to get to build it. But at the moment, it's being done through a spreadsheet, if necessary. You go to foreverchange.life and you can buy a royalty splitter. It's $180. You get 5 books, which sells at 2020, because it's 2020, all about COVID. So you basically get 5 books at retail, which is $100. And for an extra $80, you now own a piece of history and 1/1000th of 10%. So partly the answer is you duct tape and chicken wire and use a spreadsheet. And most likely it will be a Google sheet. You won't be able to edit it, but you'll be able to view it publicly. And I'll post the royalty statements. But eventually I'll have a piece of technology, which should be an NFT. And that NFT will allow you to buy it and sell it and gift it and whatever. And eventually I'll be able to say, hey, it's South by Southwest. I'm having a meetup for all royalty holders. If you want to meet me and hang out, you need to have one of these NFTs, which might mean that some people go, well, I'm not going to South by Southwest, but seems like there's a market for it. I'll list mine and make a little bit of money, or I'll gift it to someone who wants to go. So it's using the same mechanics ultimately. And ultimately, the answer is whatever it takes. One of the things I always said, and this goes back to digital, when is the only time people talk about the sound at a concert, at a pop concert or a rock concert? When is the only time people come back and they talk about the sound? The answer is when it sucks. No one comes back and goes, man, whoever was working reverb and treble, that equalizer was a man. Like, the only time you talk about the sound is when it sucks. And that is technology. And that, for the most part, is the blockchain. The blockchain is not the hero. The blockchain is the unsung hero. The blockchain sits in the background and powers this entire revolution and evolution of capitalism and allows this distribution and redistribution to happen in a fair and public, consistently governed manner. That's how it has to work. And when we start talking about it and when we start getting all technical about it, we've lost.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. And I think you've given so much to wrap around and lots of resources. Where is the best place to find out more about what you're doing, what you're building, creating, and getting contact with you?
So the funny thing is, I haven't even updated my speaker website, which was josephjaffe.com, in years. But generally, I'm at Jaffe Juice, JaffeJuice, on every platform, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, X, Instagram, etc. I'll tell you what I do is I have my show, Joseph Jaffe is Not Famous, which is youtube.com/JosephJaffeIsNotFamous or bit.ly/subscribe to the show. And that I put out every single week, and I will not stop until I drop dead, as I write in the book. I do a virtual coffee every morning, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9. I just did one this morning on actually the psychology behind why we never believe when things are good, like with crypto, whatever, or bull markets, we never believe they will ever be bad again. And when things are bad, we never believe they'll be good again. So thinking of like confirmation bias, recency bias, loss aversion, etc. So I do that 5 days a week, live book reads. I do that in Discord, and I was doing it in Clubhouse, but I'm going to move over to Chatter when it launches. So I'm excited about that because I believe very strongly in social audio. So in a way, I'm out in the field. I'm out creating content 5 days a week in audio, once a week through video, and then just being present in and on social media. And that's the best way to get hold of me. My why statement is to help people get unstuck, return to growth, and become forever changed. So that's all I care about.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And I'll put some of those resources definitely in the show notes. Nothing we spoke about today was speculative. It wasn't too technical. It was just things that businesses could implement in building relationships, regardless of scale or size. And I appreciate your time and what you've shared today.
I appreciate you. I want to say two things. One is one of the very earliest presentations when I left the agency world, went out on my own. There was a guy on stage at a Microsoft strategic account summit. His name is Rex Briggs. And he stood up and he pointed his finger, and everyone looked at him. He said, no, don't look at the finger. Look at where the finger's pointing. So when you can get a sense as to where the puck is heading, like we see what's happening, but what does it mean and what's happening? That's where our focus should be. And the second thing is, I also just want to acknowledge you and the work you're doing and your contribution and how you've stayed the course and your stamina and your endurance. The market and the world needs more people like you to be going out there and evangelizing and building and educating and inspiring. It's really important, because for every snake oil salesman and charlatan and scammer out there and spammer out there, there are the counterbalance of people out there that are diligently and consistently creating content and connections and meaning and values. I really just want to send you your flowers.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate you 100%. We covered a lot of ground in this conversation about NFTs and business. Hopefully you found these things to be very interesting. The links will be in the show notes because we discussed a lot. But as I previewed before the conversation, I would love for you to just screenshot this episode that you're listening to it and mention some of your favorite points on social media, particularly on X. That's where I spend most of my time, at Tropic Vibes. I would love to hear your thoughts, especially if you check out those links. But as usual, I just want to thank you for taking time to listen to this as we're learning and building Web3 together. So until next time, later. The Nifty Business Show is not investment advice. It provides insights and information within the space. As with anything, please do your own research before making a decision whether you're making an investment or a purchase.